हेलो हेलो हेलो।
Where's the remote control? Where's that fucking remote control? Okay, that was the test run. Now we're gonna go for the Olympic gold. If you can say,
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to today's podcast, which has essentially been 1 week later than it probably should have been, because last week was Michael Haneke's birthday. I
birthday.
think 82nd birthday or 83rd birthday. So it's quite, I mean, I didn't know that he's this old now. But so I've sort of revealed who we are talking about. And so first, before even talking about the person we are going to be talking about, I have Shilekha with me in this episode.
Hello,
Only,
everyone. I guess you all know me now. I have been previously in the two
yes.
podcasts on Wes Anderson and on the Fincher one, where we discuss
Fincher,
about,
yes.
yes.
Red Rooms also, right? And then,
Yes, yeah.
No, but I think I was about to say that you are the only one I could find who's as much into the torturous games of Mr. Haneke, Michael Haneke. For whoever isn't aware of Michael Haneke, he's an Austrian filmmaker who's fairly popular, I think, in the cinephile community, whatever you want to say. I think because his films have sort of, gained, well, his 2012 film won an Oscar for Best Foreign Film, and which is Amour. But before that, I think even White Ribbon was nominated for the Foreign Film Oscar. And then before that, Cannes has been a big champion of Haneke. Like, throughout the years, his films have consistently shown there. So I think he's become a popular name for cinephiles there. And I know from one of our viewers on the live stream that there's a great split. And actually, not just from him, but I know from a number of writers that there's a great split in people's perception towards Haneke. So I think there's one camp of people who really don't like him. This would be, I think the charges leveled against him generally are that he's a moralist, are that he's a sadist also, which are not wrong charges to be put. And I think the biggest argument actually made against him is, I don't know if you've read this, or I've just like last to last year came across this term called white elephant art. Quote unquote, white elephant. So this refers to a lot of European filmmakers who were making films in the 60s and 70s. And Haneke sort of draws a lot from some of them. So, like, I know he doesn't draw explicitly from Antonioni, but there's an element of alienation in there. And I know Shilekha's Antonioni fan, so I was
And even
mentioning him.
Dhruv.
No, I am a huge fan. We someday, the next episode is on Antonioni, we should do is on Antonioni, essentially, right? No, but I think there's
He is a
Bresson.
major Bresson, then Tarkovsky,
But I think
and
these, so what happened, I think, in the 60s and 70s is that there was a huge influx of all of them in the States. And I think Pauline Kael and one more, and other film critics also sort of, rallied against this sort of style, in which basically every part of the screen is designed, and every part of the scene means something. Like, it's overly designed, overly controlled, rigid, closed, almost like, it can only be what you see on the screen, how the directors arranged it. There's no way of external imagination where you can get through. And I think the other argument made, especially for something like, which I think is one of his most famous movies, which is Funny Games, is that it's a thesis and not an actual film, which I think is something we could also talk about. But anyways, we are not part of that side of the argument, which is why we are doing the episode. Otherwise, we wouldn't have done the episode. We are big fans, I think, on a general level. Like, I think there's some variance in terms of which films I like more than I dislike. But on this rewatch, on the marathon of the rewatch I was doing, I realized that I actually almost can't get myself to dislike a Michael Haneke film simply because I think he's a terrific director. Like, I think he's the control he has of
Amazing.
sort of editing and camera work and, just controlling. I understand the control is one of the things why people find his film suffocating and airtight and not human. But I actually think there's a lot he does with that aesthetic, which, I feel, and he had planned to do a proper introduction, but I think
Yeah.
this, rather than doing that, I think this might actually be a better way to sum up, a lot of his.
We are paying and basically an ode to him.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think a lot of my appreciation for him as an artist in general comes from his decision, or sort of, this belief that the audience is smart, and that, the belief that the audience will pick up on smaller clues and, slanted angles and find their own picture. He doesn't want to make a picture in which the audience is essentially sitting down and sort of lazing and watching it. It's almost like, you have come to watch my film, participate with it rather than be sort of, laid back and be a passive viewer, which I think is the one thing he gets very riled up by.
Yeah.
I watched a lot of interviews. He's actually, for someone who's a very, known for his austere, stern style, he's an extremely fun person to listen to. I think he's a professor right now at University
Yeah.
of Vienna.
Vienna, where he
So,
has himself studied philosophy,
yes.
psychology, and drama. And his father and mother, like he has proper background also. His father is a German actor and director, and mother is an Austrian actress. And he made his debut as a television director. He worked many years there. He has been a staunch follower of Bertolt Brecht and Brechtian themes or features such as following the fourth wall, sorry, breaking the fourth
Breaking the fourth
wall.
wall, yeah.
Breaking the fourth wall and then kind of anti-catharsis. These are the themes which are very prevalent in mostly all his films. Yeah.
And I think what you mentioned about the TV work, I think a lot of his TV work is not available to watch online. I think there's only one
Yeah.
film which I is there on Criterion Collection channel, whatever you want to say. That's The Castle, which is a 1997 film. But he was making films from 1974 to 1988, essentially, or for TV. And then he made his first film in 1989, which is The Seventh Continent, which is arguably, I would say, one of his weaker efforts, simply because it feels very much like a Bresson and Chantal Akerman imitation, if that makes sense. The imitation isn't, there's the influence is like really evident in many
Evident.
senses. But that's sort of the first part of what now has become known as the Glaciation Trilogy, essentially, which is an Austrian
Yeah.
work.
Yeah, yeah.
Which almost is like a precursor to a lot of the films which we might be talking about in this episode. But if you've not seen them, they are very interesting works. I wouldn't say they are the easiest works to watch in terms of both content, because I mean, no Haneke film is easy to watch, I think, in terms of its content, because his viewpoint towards humanity is fairly cold. Well, I think he sympathizes with people and he wants people to sympathize with each other, but the way he looks, his camera looks at people is not, no, he looks at it. I,
It's
there was
not
a,
soothing. It's not soothing
no, but
at
I think
all.
there was this very interesting quote that Bresson had made after he made The Devil Probably, which is 1977, his second last film. And he got a controversy. He got into a controversy, essentially, where the film was banned in France, where people were basically like, after seeing this film, the youth will commit suicide. Which, honestly, when I saw the film, I'm like, they are not wrong, considering whatever Bresson is showing. But then I think Bresson responded by saying that I think I see too clearly. So essentially, it's that whole idea that, these films are not concerned with sugarcoating stuff. If anything, they are going to go the opposite way and,
Yeah.
cut through the sort of sentimentality and sort of, the wishy-washiness that movies generally have. And I think so, they're not easy
And
watches. So,
that's why they're very anti-cathartic, no? That's why he follows Brecht. Like, it won't give you any, it won't, although you can't possibly connect and like, you can't connect and say that, okay, I resonate with this so much, like on emotional level, because you will feel like what, like you will feel unsettling. And that's the purpose. That's Haneke's purpose, to make you unsettled, to startle you.
Yeah, but
to
I think
kind
that
of.
unsettled, but he does make you unsettled, which is the big thing. I feel like, you know, there's
Yeah.
not, it's not like you're, at least for me, whatever the best
Yeah,
of
maybe.
Haneke for me has always been, you know, I am discomforted. And I think that's,
Yeah.
you know, that emotional connect comes from that discomfort more than
Yeah.
anything else. But anyways, I think the Glaciation trilogy is anyways harder to watch than some of his later films, because I think the human element of them is slightly less pronounced, I think, than his later work, especially something like 71 Fragments of a Chronology of Chance, which has a huge influence on two films we are going to be talking about today. So I'll bring that up whenever we talk about them. But that film is essentially building up to a shooting that happens.
Okay.
And it focuses on a lot of people in that, in Austria at that point, in Vienna, I think. And then, so it's basically radical, it's basically cutting from one set of people to another. And the idea of a cause and effect is totally absent in that film almost. So it's very experimental. I think it's, I can totally see why it'll be the favorite of a lot of people who are into just formalism as a formal exercise. I think he's better, he's done better work after that. But I think just to, before we start, I think the films we are going to be talking about, and we are going to be talking about them in spoilers.
Yeah.
And these, there are two films which we are going to be mentioning a bit first.
On a very superficial level,
Sheer
we will be
level.
mentioning some scenes
From
and we
Funny
will not,
Games
and piano teacher.
and The Piano Teacher. So both of them are not going to be discussed in full. The films we are
Details.
discussing in detail are actually his fairly overtly political films, and I think
Yeah.
they are very much, it's interesting to, you know, talk about them now in the context of something like The Zone of Interest, which sort of won
Yeah.
the best international film
Yeah.
recently. And I think I was about to forget this, but I think it's important to mention how many filmmakers Haneke actually has an influence on, contemporary filmmakers at least. So I think your Ruben Östlund, who's a double Palme d'Or winner,
Even Lanthimos, I guess.
Lanthimos, huge influence.
Lanthimos is hugely inspired by
Yeah.
Haneke.
Now I
And
think
we
he's
can
sort
see
of
that
breaking
in,
away almost in
yeah.
Poor Things or something, but like
In Dogtooth, tooth.
Dogtooth is
What
totally
is
a Haneke
totally,
aesthetic.
totally
Yeah.
Haneke? Yeah.
So and Haneke borrows from Bresson also. So it's not like, you know,
Yeah.
Haneke invented it, but like he does something
Haneke
very
is
specific.
influenced by Antonioni, Bresson, Pasolini also. If we say
Yeah.
Pasolini, Tarkovsky.
I think Bresson is still like the one that just strikes me the
Yeah.
most, because it's so, there's that flatness to a lot of the things, where he looks at them in a flat way. Flat isn't like they don't, it's not, it's almost like a blank stare. So you can see stuff for what it is. So I think that sort of and I, but contrasted with Bresson.
But the element of mystery, like there is always a
Yes.
lacuna in his films, which is also an Antonioni. So
Yes.
I have not watched much of Bresson. So I've watched
Yes.
Antonioni. So I can see that in Antonioni's films, there is always this element of mystery,
Mystery, yes.
and there is this gap which is left to the audience to fill, and that is also evident in Haneke's
Absolutely.
works.
All of his
Like
work, I think, like
all of his
even
works,
his
all
weaker
of his
works,
works.
I think have
Yeah.
that, the gaps, fragments are
Yeah.
actually, I mean, one of them is named Fragments of Chronology of Chance, whatever, but like I think fragmentation is a big thing for him.
Yeah.
And I think before we talk about the three films, I'm going to just build it up, I think, more to just talk about some of his stylistic choices, some of the themes he consistently, you know, revisits in a lot of his films. As I mentioned before, that, you know, the white elephant artness of it would mean that if you've seen two or three Haneke films, you've kind of gotten an idea of what themes, what style he's going to be operating within. There are, of course, changes within that whole aesthetic themes and subject matter, depending on the subject matter. But I think I am borrowing this from the Museum of Modern Art brackets MoMA's retrospective, which they've very much concisely listed like five themes that his films sort of discuss. One of them is alienation and social collapse. Second is the exploitation and consumption of violence, which is something like, and we can elaborate on these also, like exploitation and consumption of violence. And third is ethics of photographic image, which I think is very central to a film like Funny Games.
Yeah. And
So
even Kashi.
Yes. I mean, those are the ones. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. And Kashi also. But I think then there's the bourgeois family as the incubator of fascistic impulse, which is the simple way of saying is that bourgeois people have had, sort of.
Yeah. So he basically critiques kind of middle class or bourgeois people, which is also evident in Lemmings.
Sure,
Yeah.
the TV series, TV
Yeah.
show he meant, yeah.
TV show he made. So these
Yeah.
that as Dhruv mentioned, they are all these TV shows which he made, they're all precursors and they
Yeah.
foreshadows his later works. Are
Yeah. I mean,
that's it.
Glaciation Trilogy is like, I have to say, Funny Games is essentially Benny's video refined. 71 Fragments is Code Unknown and White Ribbon, both in some ways. So, you know, again, you'll see sort of links if you decide to go on a binge of Haneke films, if you want to go into like a severe depression
Yeah.
about the world, you can try that. But no, I think we can talk about his style first, I think, and then
Yeah.
we can begin from somewhere like Funny Games, which is
James.
like a really big, I
Yeah.
think that's still one of his big, most well-known films, just because it is
Yeah.
shocking. It upset a
Yeah.
lot of people when it released at Cannes, and I mean, he made this, well, I would say stupid decision to remake it in English, but like,
Yeah.
I fell into the trap of watching it, and I was like, well, still very good, you know, like it's still very well made, and the actors are very good. But anyways, Funny Games, Srilekha, was that the first movie you saw of Hanif?
Yes, it was the first film I watched of Haneke, and I
This is
couldn't.
1997, by the way, the
Yes,
Austrian version,
1997,
not the
the original,
2007
yes, the original
original.
one,
Yes.
not the American one, the original one
Yes.
was 1997, and I watched it, and I still remember I couldn't sleep one night. The whole night I watched because that one scene where this Paul, the one of the invaders, teenage
Yes. So
invaders,
it's
he
so for people
finds.
who are unfamiliar with it, it's basically a suburb, like there's a couple who goes, a very well-to-do couple
Holiday.
goes to their holiday home essentially, which is secluded from
Yeah.
everywhere, and then basically they get terrorized by two young guys who seem to just want to
Named
have fun.
Paul and Peter. The two guys
Yeah,
are named Paul and
two
Peter.
guys who just want to have their own fun in their really weird,
Yeah.
twisted torture porn way. So I think the film was released during a time when torture porn was a big thing in
Yeah.
US. And this was Haneke's answer to it, essentially. And sort of one of the things which he repeatedly mentions is that he doesn't think violence on screen can provide a sense of catharsis. Disagree with
Yeah.
it, but the way he explores it in Funny Games is really fascinating, I think. So,
And we will be
yeah.
talking about particularly four scenes where he does it.
Yeah.
So this theme we are so for this film we are employing the theme of exploitation and consumption of violence mostly,
And ethics of
and
photographic image also a
ethics of
lot.
photographic image. Yes, specifically for the rewind scene and
Yes, yes.
for
Yeah.
the
Fourth
also
wall
for
breaking also, no?
yeah fourth wall breaking. Fourth wall breaking. So fourth wall breaking essentially takes place in like thrice. So first it takes
Yes.
place when I guess Paul turns to the camera with the, it's at the beginning when their dog is dead and Paul
Yes.
turns to the camera with the hint.
Spoilers. Sorry,
Yeah,
I'm
this these
kidding.
are
Yeah.
spoil. Yeah.
Yes.
All are full of spoilers,
The
and
dog
especially the
dies, the child
yeah.
dies, the good people die, everyone dies. Audience dies essentially also, because that's his whole attack against the people. The only people surviving here are the killers
The
essentially.
perpetrators,
Yeah.
actually the perpetrators are the, and actually you know like actually we are on the side of the perpetrators only, the audience, because if the perpetrators are not there, without them there
Yeah.
is no suspense in the film,
Yeah.
and without them the movie will also be not made, and without them we
Yes.
will also be not starters. So Haneke
Yes.
is kind of you know playing with us. So actually we are on the side of the perpetrators. We feel
But
that we are
yeah. But
sympathizing
then
with the
he yeah, but then he toys with us quite a bit, I think. Like
yeah.
as you said about the fourth wall breaking, but the other really telling moment in the film is when the child shoots, gets shot, the
Yeah,
camera doesn't capture the
exactly.
gruesome act
It
essentially on screen.
captures a kitchen where Paul is kind of preparing himself a sandwich, and we are not we don't see that gruesome scene as Dhruv mentioned, where the child is being killed, actually killed, and camera is not addressed to the murder scene, and it's
Yep.
focused on one of the perpetrators who is comfortably and very peacefully preparing a sandwich in the kitchen to
Yes.
have it.
Yep.
So it's kind he here he follows this tradition where directors cut away from the graphic or disturbing images,
Yep.
and he follows this tradition.
Yeah. I mean, the if you want, again, I don't want to dunk on Jonathan Glazer at all, because I think what he's done with
Yeah.
Zone of Interest is very remarkable on a formal level. But if you want to see how off-screen sound is utilized in select incidents throughout a filmography, I think Haneke's filmography is filled with these examples
Yeah,
where
yeah.
you where the camera, where image and sound, essentially he leaves one part of it covered or blank, or so that the audience can do the work of filling in the blanks. And I think
Yeah.
that's one of the things I'm always desperate for in so many movies, because I'm like, the imagination, to activate someone's imagination is actually very easy.
Yeah.
And I hate that some filmmakers, like most filmmakers, actually choose not to do that. And this is, to me
They
at least, this
show
is.
what they want to show. They don't leave any gaps. So there is no way. So it's something like not a. So Haneke's films, we can say they are two-way interaction. So we can interact. He's telling something and we can interpret. So we are
Yes.
essentially not only the participant, but the audience is also the author in his
Yeah,
films in
of
some
course.
way. So
Absolutely.
the viewers are participants and authors. And in most films, we are the viewers. So we are feeding and taking whatever the director is kind of telling us. And there is no way we can perceive it in our own way. Like the chances become less. So that's why I adore even Antonioni for this, because we can have our own perceptions and everything. So talking about the fourth wall, the most imp like the two, three scenes. So the first one is that of this devious smile on the faces on the full close-up, and he winks in a
Winks at
very
us,
playful, playful wink. The second one is when Paul and his pal Peter inform the family that they will kill them within like 12 hours, and then he speaks directly to the audience, like, "What do you think?" he asks casually, and you're on their side, aren't you? And then we know that this is Haneke toying with us, typically, because we
You
know
know,
that.
I don't. It's funny, this is this one film of his which I don't like, that I like so much. Like, as in, like, I don't like that I. It's so effective. I don't like rewatching it. That's the one film I skipped while rewatching his filmography. I just find it so oppressingly, sadistic in its sort of. I
Yeah.
mean, it is commenting on the audience's lust for violence and lust for
Yeah.
catharsis through the screen, and
Yeah.
it's playing
But yet
against it,
again,
but
he's debunking the common kind of common kind of the tropes or common grand narratives which show violence, where ultimately the villain dies, the perpetrator dies in the end. But here the opposite happens. The perpetrator is kind
I
of
mean,
goes
well, one of
away.
them does get killed, right? But
Yeah, but we are talking about that now. Yeah, so there is this the famous rewind scene of Funny Games where the couple, the who is
Yes.
the
No, only
matriarch
the
or
wife is left.
yeah, the
Yeah.
matriarch, the matriarch.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Anna grabs a
No.
shotgun and she blows a hole in one of the kind
I
of
think it's the
perpetrator's
other one,
chest.
not the
No,
main guy.
Peter's. No,
Peter.
not them. Peter's chest. And Paul stunned. Finds Paul, like the main guy, Paul, he's stunned. He finds television remote. He pauses, and then the rewind happens. And then we see that he takes away that, he removes the shotgun as Anna reaches for it. And yeah, again, we are being played.
No catharsis, essentially. So
Yeah.
I think
So he
this
gives
is.
catharsis in a moment. He gives, offers us catharsis in that moment where
Then
Anna is
snatches it away.
shooting and then snatches it away. So it's like slapping.
Slapping,
It's
yes, absolutely.
slapping on a.
Which is not a way to, I was like, that's not a way to sell a filmmaker. But I know people, but I think that's some of the fascinating things which you look for as a cinephile after you
Yeah.
experience a lot of films. You look for filmmakers who will challenge you, and
Yeah.
who will.
It
But and
is
it's also.
his distinctive style. It is typical Haneke. So
Yes. And in
it's his
fact,
signature
Funny
style.
Games is the only film actually we'll be mentioning in which actually the focus is a lot on media sensationalism.
Yeah.
The films we are going to be discussing, a lot of them are actually not focusing on that aspect of the aspect of his work. I think that's a lot of his 90s work is predicated on, this media sensationalism. TV is a big thing in his thing, which we will
Yeah.
get to. But we'll get to the film which I know Shilika is most excited to talk about. So, which is, I think, the outlier sort of
Yeah.
in a way in Haneke's filmography, because it's not
Yeah.
a film originally written by him, it's adapted from a novel. And it's the first time he worked with Isabelle Huppert, who he worked
Yeah.
with again in
Time
Amour.
of the Wolf. Amor. No,
Or
not Amor. Time
Time
of
of
the
the
Wolf.
Wolf. Amour may be here, wo. She's the daughter. And
Yeah,
Happy
yeah,
End.
yeah,
And
yeah, yeah.
Happy End. So
I watched
there's
Happy
all of
End.
them
Yeah.
in all of that. But yeah, you can take this over. But anyways, I think the themes still apply of like this whole bourgeois family having, you know,
Yeah.
this not essentially. I think he mentions this, so I'll don't quote me as being the person who's sort of invented this. As he said, talking, well, speaking but not talking, or talking but not speaking, something like that. That people do talk, but they act, no, talking but not communicating, essentially. That's the big thing which a lot of his films will, you know, keep on addressing. But I
Yeah.
think Piano Teacher has a lot of that in a way
Yeah,
which
piano
is
teacher, so
cruel, I
because as
think.
you said,
So,
like talking, so most of Erica Kohut, played by Isabella Huppert. So her performance is all through the eyes, like the feelings she escalates. She lets the look dart around the room in the scenes. There's willed blankness on her stare.
That's what if I had to do the rankings of best performances, she would be somewhere there, like in
Yeah.
the pantheon of great performances.
Yeah.
And it's not just because she's doing extreme stuff, it's because her performance has to reveal two completely polar opposite sides, actually,
Yeah.
not just one.
So, like, why Piano Teacher is important? Because, in respect to, most importantly, all the three films which we'll discuss politically. So, here there is, in White Ribbon, we will be seeing there is a kind of sexual politics which goes on, which is also there in Piano Teacher, and which kind of, I'm not going into details much because it would be long and we
Because
are
Dhruv
doing
has
this.
said that not to
Yeah.
do it.
Yeah. No, no.
We could say
Yeah.
that. We have three
And
movies
also,
to
we
talk
are.
about, that's why.
Exactly. So the sexual politics in Piano Teacher, which is his 2001, just after Funny Games, I guess. Yes. So it has
That's
sexual
his
politics.
breakthrough almost.
Yeah. It echoes
No,
off.
it's not after Funny Games. It's after Code Unknown, which we are going to be discussing.
Oh, yes. It's after Code Unknown. Yes. Code Unknown is 2000, and then, yes, 2001. Yes, you're right. So in Piano Teacher, there is the sexual politics which echoes off, kind of psychoanalyzes a lot. And you can all can look about psychoanalysis.
You
I'm
know,
not going into
no, you
details.
know, but the book apparently had a whole part about her childhood and the psychoanalysis being explored explicitly. And he,
Yeah.
like, you know, may
But
again, this is
Haneke,
no, it's the
will
whole thing of, you
Haneke?
know, allowing it to not explaining everything is a big thing for him, right? So I think he
Yeah.
sort of allows us to draw a lot from insinuation and, you know, different expressions in which people are talking.
Yeah,
So
so the yes, as Dhruv said, so Haneke like completely chugs that portion of her background story. Nothing is offered except we see like she has no father figure, and then we can bring about Electra complex, castration anxiety. I'm just referring the terms in the podcast so that people who are really interested in this field, they can go through. So there is a lot of castration anxiety which goes on here. I'm not explaining it. You all can look in the theories. And there's also, as I said, like the psychoanalysis going on, Electra complex is there. And the most important thing, like the academy, the Viennese Music Academy, which is embedded in a conservative society, which we will also see in the White Ribbon. The village's
In
atmosphere is
all
very
of them, I
conservative.
feel, in all of the films, it's an insulated existence,
Yeah.
which a lot of people in his films lead. You know,
Yeah.
it's like they are caught in their own bubble. That bubble itself is very suffocating. It has its own rules, and it has the ability to stifle any sort of genuine expression, if anything. It leaves you very sterile almost, if that makes
Yeah.
sense. And like and I think the idea of Piano Teacher is to, or her objective is to try and break away from it, but the idea is that maybe she can't, and she and the way she tries to find a way out is
So
deeply,
art
deeply
is not
unsettling.
offering any consolation. So basically, there is this concept of people seeking refuge in art, but art doesn't offer any consolation when there are your desires which are hindering your process as an artist. And here, and this is clearly an example of anti-Kunstroman. So Kunstroman is
What is
the
that?
genre. Yes, I'm explaining. So it's genre of works where it charts the journey of an artist, a musician. So here, a journey is stunted. It's not,
Yes.
the growth is not there. So it's clearly an anti-Kunsthal roman or
But it's
Kunsthal's
also, I
roman.
think, what you were saying about, I mean, artist, the other
Yeah.
side of the artistic pursuit is jealousy, and just that
Yeah.
angle of it is also there. And then there's this
Repressed sexual
repress. Everything is about
desires.
repression in some senses in this
Yes,
vernacular
yes. And
itself.
also when she is delivering her musical performance, it seems to be a product of rigorous discipline of academia, which again we see in White Ribbon, especially the way the pastor, one of the characters, tries to discipline his children. And
Yes.
it comes from Erica's severe personal depression, and she clearly has moments of personal connection to her music
Yep.
and the passive role of the audience, which I wanted to say. So there is this power hierarchy which goes on, and that is evident in all of Haneke films. So in Piano
Yes.
Teacher, the Erica, who is this very, like, she would have been a great pianist, but then she has not got the recognition she deserved. So when she kind of plays all in all her performances, when she plays the piano, the passive role of the audience in relation to that of the composer is highlighted, alluding
Yes.
to the kind of different strata occupied by high art musical genius. And it shows the suppression of the audience, like the audience is not participated, so they're just playing a passive role. And
Sure.
this somehow shows the hierarchy evident between the
Yes.
composer and the audience because of these
Yeah.
kind of rigorous discipline. And this theme we see in the three films, which
Three
we will
films
be
that you're gonna, and I
talking
before we
about.
move on to them, I would just like to link. Well, not link, but if you do end up watching The Piano Teacher and be traumatized by what all happens in that film,
Yeah.
and it is, I think trigger warning is due for that
Also
film if you do
violence.
watch
Also we talked about, so there's so much
sexual
violence in that.
violence,
Yeah.
and in that it's a lot of it's shown. It's not a, you know, it doesn't skimp around it.
Only the hierarchy gets reversed at the end. So there is a spoiler. I'm not telling what happened in the end. You all
No,
watch.
but no, that's maybe one of his most difficult works to see, I think, just because there's so much explicit self-harm is also there. Like
Yeah.
it's a really
Yeah.
triggering work, it can be, but I think it's a valuable work. If you are into, by the way, the whole piano teacher, you know, the what Shilekha was describing about the piano and how that sort of creates a distance, and you know, this persona who persona. I was mentioning Ingmar Bergman, actually. So I was saying,
Yeah.
if you're into Ingmar Bergman's work, or if you want to
Classical
watch his work,
music,
I was
such
about
as
to say
Schumann.
Autumn Sonata has
Yeah.
a character who plays the piano just like Isabelle
Yeah.
Huppert plays it.
Yep.
And then, you
Yep.
know, you can contrast those sort of scene sequences, and then you can make a movie out of yourself. So, which is
Yeah.
deeply, deeply depressing. So this is essentially an episode in which depressing stuff shall be discussed even more.
Very disturbing and depressing stuff. Nothing that will ease your distress, but will definitely
Challenging
enhance it.
stuff also, though, I feel like, I mean, again, I always joke around with the whole, you know, because I know when I say depressing stuff, people have an impression of people as cinephiles liking a lot of depressing films. These are depressing films. Some of them have catharsis, I think. At least one of them has catharsis, I think. But I think it's important to watch these films, like, just in terms of, again, like, I don't want to push people to watch Haneke's films. I just want to.
But as a cinephile, you must, I feel we must explore different genres of
Of
films.
course.
So you can explore Haneke. He's a distinctive style, he's brilliant. So if you are into
Go.
mystery,
If you wanna go and start your journey with Haneke, start with the film we are going to be talking about, because that's his mildest, one of his mildest in terms
yeah.
of violence films,
Yep, yep.
which is Code Unknown. This is a
Yep.
2000
Mark
film.
2000 film, and the subtitle goes Incomplete Tales of Several Journeys.
Yes.
Yes.
So this is very much his first foray into French films,
Yep.
if anything, because I think this is the first time he went outside Austria, and then this is a multi-language production, international
Yeah.
co-production, France, Germany, and Romania. The languages spoken in this film are French, Maninka, Romanian, German, English, Arabic, and French Sign Language. So, you know, it is a lot about sort of multiculturalism and French society at a point in time when, you know, a lot of people. And it's a very globalization, essentially, a lot of things which are still going on. And I feel this is the sort of film that will only gain more relevance in nowadays time. If I don't think it's actually aged badly at all. If anything, it's
No.
aged better than you would expect a film like this to do.
Yeah.
But it's directed by, of course, him, written by him.
Yeah.
It's adapt. It's inspired a little bit by the war reporter Olivier Weber's work. That's
Yes.
the sort of inspiration for a bunch of the vignettes, essentially, he arranges here. The DOP of this film is Jorgen Jorges, who used to be a cinematographer, but after this, whichever films we are going to be talking about has a regular cinematographer, Christian Berger, who's going to be
Christian
mentioned.
Berger. Yeah.
Yeah, and this is
And also one character from, sorry, Ru, for interrupting.
No.
So just adding, so one character who is a war journalist here, who is a kind of boyfriend of Anne, played by Juliette
Yes.
Binoche.
Yeah.
So that same character we see in one of Haneke's TV shows, Three Paths to the
Okay.
Lake, which is
Interesting.
made in 1976.
There is definitely a Haneke universe going on here. I mean, there is. I mean, he always likes to keep all his female characters are named Anne,
Anne,
Lauren.
Lauren, and all his
Yeah.
male characters, Georges.
All of his. Okay. Yeah. See, because in this also there's Joseph. Okay. Fine.
Yeah.
Anyways, this is a fascinating film. This is a
Yeah.
film which. So I think there's a. I'll begin by saying. Slightly, so again, we talked a little bit about 71 fragments of a chronology of a chance, where it's about, building up to an incident of a shootout and following different lives. This is the
Yeah.
flip side of it, essentially. You begin with an incident in which everyone comes together. That
Yes.
like that incident is the thing that causes a ripple effect, essentially. And then
Yeah.
you follow each individual life as
Yeah.
they sort of go throughout their doing their own thing in
Yeah.
France. So I think very much, if you want to, if like we had said, sort of Haneke does like to, flip and play around with conventions and tropes that are popular in the mainstream. I think during this time, this point in time at least, there were a lot of hyperlink narratives that were coming out in Hollywood. I remember Paul Thomas Anderson actually came out with Magnolia one year before this. So, you have a lot of films in which all it's about ensembles and how all of them sort of collide together by the end of the film. Like it's like almost
Yeah.
a collision of different forces.
An incident
Here,
which knits all the character, all the narratives, so it's
yes,
multi-narrative, several narratives, and then
yeah,
that single incident inflicts changes in their lives.
exactly. And then
Yeah.
everything sort of resolved. One like
Yeah.
everything gets everything together.
Yeah.
Nothing like this will happen in Code Unknown, of course, because
Yeah.
it's Michael Haneke. And his, but I think actually the way he structures this film is brilliant. I think the way the film moves through its different characters and vignettes is much, much more, much better than whatever he was doing with 71 fragments of a chronology of chance. I think there it was a lot of snippets, and it was like it cut like the snippet, like a vignette would happen. Hard cut to black, vignette would happen, hard cut to black, but there is very little you grasp onto the people. Here, firstly, the opening shot is magnificent, like not
Yes.
just in terms of construction, but in terms
It
of
is of a
tension.
long, yeah, it is of a
Yeah.
long take of like 9 minutes, a single take scene
Yes.
where the
Yes.
dolly tracks parallel to the boulevard and,
Boulevard,
you
and
know.
yes, and it like it's going back and forth and
Yeah,
back and
yeah,
forth. So
yeah,
essentially,
yeah.
yeah. And it sort of
Yeah.
introduces you to all the characters,
All
where
the
they are.
characters.
Sort of, what hierarchy sort of
So
almost there's at
what are the
play.
characters? Let's
Yeah, so I
so.
think one of the main characters is Juliette Binoche's Anne Laurent, who's
Yeah.
an actress who's
Yeah.
basically she's a reasonably well-to-do actress who's getting more work essentially, and she has a boyfriend called Georges. This is based off the war reporter Olivier Weber only, from which the thing was inspired. And I think
Yeah.
he sort of he his brother sort of come keeps on coming keeps on running out of his house, off like he lives in a rural area, but sort of keeps on coming to the city. He doesn't want to be in a rural area. So you've got those two characters in the first place. Then you've got
Yeah.
this Romanian immigrant, I think, or refugee, is
Yeah.
it right? I
Immigrant.
think immigrant,
Yeah.
Romanian immigrant is there, who we see in the first scene sitting down
Whose
at in
name is Maria? Maria,
Maria.
Maria. Yeah.
Maria, and she's sitting down on the street essentially in the first
Yeah.
sequence, asking. So she's begging for money essentially on the
Yeah.
boulevard.
Yeah.
And then I think those, and then there's the black character who's Amadou, who's
Amadou, yeah.
basically he's the person. So I'll just describe it in succinctly. Essentially, the first part, the incident that shakes up everything, essentially happens at the beginning, where Anne is walking with her, what is he? Her boyfriend's brother, who's run away from his house, and she's trying to convince him to be calm, and she's trying to give him the keys of her house, and she's like, you go stay there. But even within those micro conversations, you sort of get to know that she thinks that she doesn't have an affluent life to allow more than two, three people inside a house. So, like all those micro conversations, I can't delve into, but when you watch it, there it's all there whenever you see them talking. But when Anne leaves him, he goes back, and while eating something, he takes the wrapper. After he eats it, he takes the wrapper and throws it in the lap of this Romanian immigrant who's sitting down. Amadou sees it. He's walking around there. He stops him and he's basically like, you can't do this. It's wrong. You should apologize to her. So the nephew, her, the brother doesn't react properly at all. And they get into a sort of heated conversation. Then Juliette Binoche's character comes in. She's trying to, separate the two. Other people are watching, which is a bigger theme. If you've seen Ostlund's movies, Ruben Ostlund's done The Square and other stuff. Like a lot of people, it's like bystander complex almost. It's people are watching but not doing anything. But interestingly, during when this is happening, the Romanian immigrant just wants to move away from there. She just wants to leave the premises and like go away, not get into any conflict. Police get involved, take note of her. Of course, they don't arrest the white French people. They end up hitting and arresting the black person. And then everything sort of, all the narratives split from there essentially. And then you kind of observe each and every person and other people in their life and how, this has impacted these people, this hasn't impacted these people. You see both of those sides. And you see how, when something like this impacts one of the French white people, what effect that has, does what are the sort of implications of that? So, but I think it's a fascinating film in how it like unfolds, because you have to basically, you're looking at different parties and different reactions to them, and they are sort of, and I'm super interested in most of these characters, which is the other thing. I think you get a lot of, and I think all the vignettes, which are shorter, all in one take, none of them have sort of cuts, right? I think that's the, if you want a formal gimmick to go somewhere, then that's the formal gimmick also. But no, go ahead. What did you think? I think that's I hope I've set this up pretty decently. Yeah.
All right. So, I first want to know what was happening at that time around. So first, when the film was being the premises or what is the setting that's
Yes.
inspired, the
Set
setting of
up.
the film is the setup or setting of the film is inspired by what was happening around the world at that time. So basically,
Yes.
there was globalization, as Dhruv mentioned. So Africans were desperate to go to Europe at that time and were either
Yes.
drowning or they are getting rescued from the flimsy. And then there were overcrowded boats launched in the Mediterranean Sea by traffickers, and Greek and EU citizens were being made destitute by the
Yes.
they so they're coming to the country and they were made destitute by the very European leaders, and they had thought they were there to protect their interests. So, and then
Yes.
there was all then there's also this critique of Yugoslavia, which is exposed, and the atrocities committed.
That's the news, right?
Yes, that's the news.
And
The
that's
which
where
is
war, that's where the war reporter has gone, I
That's
think.
where Anne's boyfriend
Yes,
George is
George's.
there,
Yeah.
and vicious ethnic conflicts going on in
Yeah.
Yugoslavia. So,
Yeah.
and the characters are Jean, Anne, Maria, Amadou, and Jean's Jean or Jean. It's Jean, I guess, in French. We spell it as
Who?
Jean, like brother.
The brother's name I haven't noted down here, but we can.
Jean Jean. It's Jean
Jean.
or
Okay,
Jean, whatever.
doesn't
So
matter.
his
Yeah.
father is there, and we come to then Amadou's family. So his family, they are all Africans, and his father is a taxi driver. His sister is deaf.
You know the I'm just going to mention it because it follows directly from the first sequence. I love how his family and everyone is introduced, in like operating
So,
within the sort of thing.
yes.
And Anne and George's are introduced through photographs. and
Yes.
through like they are almost
Yep.
they their lives are
Yes,
sort of
yes.
inside the television essentially, and these
Yeah,
people
yeah.
are leading the yeah. So I like that contrast a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, and before I go to the discussion of the characters, so the film consists of 42 discrete scenes,
Okay.
and then it cuts to black. And this cutting to black, which Dhruv said, since it's in all one take, so it cuts to black. So it's kind of, I feel, signifies the tension which goes on between the North European citizens and the immigrant population, kind of symbolic of the tension. And now coming back to as I was carrying on, so Amadou's father is a taxi driver, his sister is deaf, a superstitious mother, and
Yes.
she shares her horrific stories about the horrible experiences they have experienced there. And there is this bullied younger brother, and their attitude towards Amadou's white girlfriend, that is also very
Yes.
interesting.
Yeah.
So this kind of whole African population in France and their assimilation into their
Yep.
society, this kind of reminds me of a very famous essay, or not essay actually, which is later made into a book, that is by Roald Barthes' Mythologies. And that is, I will be mentioning a very small portion where there is
Yep.
this poster of a black soldier on the front cover of Paris Match, a magazine. And the essay goes with a lot of hermeneutic code, and a lot of codes are being, I'm not going into that because the viewers will get confused. So what I want to say that on the front we see a black man who is wearing French soldier saluting, and we feel that the French people, oh my God, there is no discrimination, they're accepting the African as one of their own, and there is no kind of colonization going on, no suppression going on. So that's what initially we feel. But then Barthes tells us that on the surface it promotes the equality of French, but on the other hand it shows the process of brainwashing that he had apparently undergone, this process kind of which culminating his Frenchness. So dislocation, so his whole history of
You
his
forget your
roots
old
are
culture, right?
being,
Assimilation, I think assimilation is the big
yeah.
thing. You had mentioned assimilation. I think that's a
So
big yeah.
yeah. So here also, if we parallel, so we see this African family who are very well settled in France, and they're even earning their livelihood.
Yes.
But then we see in one scene where Dhruv said the white, like when the there is this inequality, or when the French man is really at fault. So when the cops are coming, he's not getting the punishment. But then the black person and the other immigrant, they are paying the price.
Yeah,
Even when,
I about to say the Romanian immigrant actually gets the worst of it. She gets
yes,
deported.
she gets deported. So this kind of shows the kind of politics of the French, their hypocrisy.
Absolutely.
The
Yeah, absolutely.
hypocrisy
I
is
mean,
being
I think it's
critiqued by Haneke.
again very much the I think this is one of his more overtly it most overtly engages with racial tensions.
Yes, the racism.
Exactly. So I think that very much is like it's a
Yeah.
through line throughout the film. I think a lot of the other concerns that he has, like, you know, with television are there in the background. I think there's, and I think again that bystander complex is such a big thing in this film, especially if you look at the, because this time I was rewatching, I was like, you know, Juliette Binoche's character is really not very sympathetic, is she? Like for the longest time, I was like,
Even
she's really not nice.
not even bringing to this, so there is this also going on a separate, very small. So there is this neighbor in Binoche's apartment where there is this child who is being meted with violence, and we see the ineffectual consciences of Anne and George's, like when she suspects this unseen violence which is being done to a neighbor child. And the other hand, his boyfriend, he talks about life. He's not even responding, or not even acknowledging or not even willing to be a part of the conversation. And it replies that life's been simple in the war zones of Yugoslavia, and that comes as a shock. Like,
That's a very
not even,
PTSD thing for him, though, I think,
yeah. And then
right?
the child dies, and we see the funeral going on, and
And
where
then
you
also
know,
there's no sort of reaction. Like she has the
yeah,
opportunity to, you know, she does do, she goes to the funeral, but she has
yeah.
no reaction otherwise. Like I feel, you know, I mean, the thing with Code Unknown is because it's a very sprawling
Yeah.
film in one sense, because it's cutting between, it's basically dispersing more and more the
Yeah.
more you watch it. It might be a little difficult to talk about it in a sort of
Yeah.
conventional sense, but I think One of the things, the bystander complex thing is just like the big thing for me in this. Like, it's just, especially when you look at the when you look at Anne's character, when you look at even George's character sometimes, it's just like, you know, I think I've written
Yeah.
it down here. Like, there's a questioning of both civilized society he lives in, but also of his position in which in both these places, like his position in civilized society and his position in there. So it's because you remember that scene where basically
In
they're in the
the
restaurant.
restaurant, yes, in the restaurant, and they're talking and
Yes,
they're
yes, yes.
asking him like, why are you going there? And he doesn't have any concrete answer to provide. And then Julia Binoche, like Anne, she cuts the argument and telling that you all are again fighting and something like that. I don't remember properly the line and anything. So quote unquote, basically, guys. So it's I feel the title shows the societal codes or referring to the societal codes. And Haneke is critiquing the societal codes in a way, and also the film
I
kind
mean, the
of
film,
not.
to be honest, we made it sound very mysterious. I have an issue with the film. Well, one issue. And that's basically he does his thesis scene in the beginning, which I'm like, don't know if I want that. The thesis scene with the sign language, essentially. That's his thesis where a child is showing signs, the
Sign.
codes or whatever.
Even
And
the
then
film ends on that
with,
same scene, so it's circular going on.
I'm not sure we need that scene, Mr. Haneke, but who am I to tell you? Well, everything else is amazing in it. So,
So emerges the personal and social crisis, and the kind of girl is reflected in the last 13 minutes, where there is in the background music, there's only percussion used. Complete
percussion.
drums
That's
going on.
the that's the and also for someone, Haneke doesn't use diegetic music at non-diegetic music at all,
At
almost in a.
all,
So when
yes.
he's using music, it's a big thing also in many ways, because you know, like,
Yeah.
because you have such an absence of sound, like
Yeah.
external sound, that percussion is sort of connecting all these stories in a way, but also showing how
Yeah.
disparate they are, sort of, you know, in disparate directions they are going. I mean, we've not talked about the subway sequence, which is very infamous actually.
Yeah, the where the angry Arab youth kind of abuses Anne and
This
spits
is,
hatefully on her face. And before that scene only, we see still images from. Is that scene? I'm not confused
It's,
that we see stills from Yugoslavian wars. Is that
yes.
scene before? Yes, and
I
then this
think
scene
close
happens.
before that.
Yeah, so there are still images of Yugoslavian wars where her boyfriend is on the kind of
He leaves back,
headquarters.
I think, to go to, yes.
Yeah.
He's taking photos of people and juxtaposing them with sort of, you know, he's
Yeah.
taking photos of people in France and I think juxtaposing them with people somewhere
What he
else, I think.
felt, now he's kind of taking the pictures of people in France and then he's using the voiceover of what he has experienced in the Yugoslavian war. Yeah. And just after that, this scene, which is a very disturbing scene, and
The long take using the 13, like almost like a 10-minute train sequence using, or what?
yeah, the angry Arab youth when
Yeah, like
he
the connection to Cachet essentially, right? Anne
kills.
Lorrain, the actor who's playing, who actually
Yeah.
voices, stands up for her, is the same one in
Yeah.
Cachet also. So
Yeah.
no, but I think that scene
And
is very telling
also
because
one scene is there, like before this, much before, where during her shooting, she gets closed up in one like room and
I have
she's getting
that's
threatened,
very
right?
indicative of what her life is actually in real life.
Yes, exactly.
The film within the film is The Collector. That's the
Yep.
title of the film. And I've
Yeah.
noted down a particular quote, which, and after that I've written, I feel called out, which is, quote, begin quote, dying within soundproofed and hermetically sealed walls, close quote. Like, that's what one of the dialogues goes to her in that film within a film. And I'm just like, it's that insular existence where you're living such a life of privilege in one way, but you are not willing to sort of, you know, acknowledge it in a way also, because you're just living it. You don't realize what else is what your action actually, because none of these people meet actually
Yeah.
again in the film.
Yeah.
So you basically see them cross paths, but they're never interacting with each other ever again, except
Yeah.
for the first
Yeah.
scene. So
Yeah.
you see how disparate their lives are, and how, I
And
mean,
even
there's
the
this
when the camera
really.
movements are there, it completely specifically with Jean's father, who is a farmer and who
Oh,
wants
it's a
his son
very
to be a
sad
farmer.
sequence also. Oh yeah, with
Yeah.
the cows is also very,
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we see he's eating alone, and the camera is shown in that way. It portrays the alienation. Even in the flat, when Anne is kind of ironing, she's ironing
Yes.
alone, like
Yeah.
there, and
I
it
mean, there's this
shows.
really, I remember, like this time maybe I noticed more, but there's this moment where the father, George's father, who they go to meet at the father, at the farm, sorry. And he just, whenever he wants to cry, he just goes to the bathroom because he can't cry in front of people. And I was just like, that's just, you know, this, there's a
This is
sadness to
this is
almost
actually
that
my
human
story.
interaction. Huh, but like there's a lot of people do that. I mean, I'm saying like I don't do it, but like, you know, a lot of people do a similar thing because they are too afraid to show their vulnerable side. And I feel the whole film is sort of, and which is why I think one of the very cathartic moments of the film actually is the one in the grocery store where Anne and George almost, you know, express very loudly their feelings in a,
Feelings.
even though they have to like sort of, you know, cover up almost in a way. But I feel that sequence is really, really terrific, I think. Like, and I'm also really moved by the Romanian immigrant, especially when she's going back to France and in the car, in the ship, I think it is.
And then she's pressurized to return back to the streets of Paris.
Yeah.
And when she's returning to a country, she's pretending like she does a job, and whereas she's actually a beggar.
Yeah.
So it shows the predicament
Yeah,
of
very, like
the
again,
immigrant.
yeah, the fragmentation is very much also, and I think you mentioned cut to blacks. I mean, I think to me it also, again, it's the sort of antithesis to your match cut, what you generally would get in a hyperlink narrative, right? Where you would get one person doing something and then the camera will cut to a mimicking motion of, but there is no matching here. How can stuff be matching when you are living in such disparate conditions and disparate rules and codes, as you want to say, right? So I think in
And
many
their
ways,
journeys are never complete, so they're incomplete
yes.
as the subtitle goes. So that's
Yeah.
very sad, and that leaves you empty, honestly, at
That,
the
but that's,
end.
I think, the whole, I think that's what he is going for in the sense of capturing, quote unquote, the illusion of, he keeps on saying this, the illusion of reality. Because, you know, for him, mainstream cinema simplifies a lot of things. It'll be like, you know, these people are connected, but he sort of just allows to, he emphasizes the disconnections, actually, not even allows them, he emphasizes just how
Shows
disconnected
the
we are.
fragmented reality, or
Fragmentation, absolutely.
shows
Yeah.
reality, brutalness of reality, brutality of reality as it is. There is no sugarcoating, as you mentioned also in the previous when you were
Very
describing.
much looking at things as the way they are. I mean, it's not a, like, I know it's cynical, but like, you know, but it's also, it does feel truthful. It doesn't feel fake.
This is how the
Yeah.
world works, actually.
Yeah.
This is how we are.
Yeah. And
This
I
is
think,
also what is going on. All
I mean,
right.
more so even like, you know, you keep on getting sort of, it's
So
not a film which,
this film, guys, like those of you who will be watching after listening to the
you think?
podcast,
You
so
think we've sold the film by telling people how saddening and depressing it is?
No, I'm just telling specifically if we see the whatever background I said about the globalization and the Yugoslavian war, and also about the immigrant crisis. So it very much is evident in our world as well, in today's world as well. So
Yeah.
that in that way, as Ruth said, the film hasn't aged at all. So it's very relevant in today's
Yeah.
world.
Also, it's
So
one of his least, genuinely one of his least
the
violent or
least
explicit.
distressing films, least distressing.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's still like quite like that train sequence is still very distressing to me. Like, it's just that, you know, it's because it's an incident that can happen to like almost anyone, and it's just like to see people around you just be stone faced. And I'm not saying I'm someone who would have taken action, right? It is our tendency to just be standing there and take what is being doled out to people. And I mean, I don't know how else to pray. Like, I don't know how to praise Juliette Binoche, right? Because I'm a big Juliette Binoche fan, and I'm like, oh, how do I praise her? Because she's terrific in most things. But there's that, in that sequence when she has to, you know, hold her quote
Yeah,
unquote
tears, her
decorum.
decorum
She's
and
holding her
emotion.
decorum, but then she bursts out crying, and
Curse, yeah.
I was just like, you know, those types of things do affect you because it's so genuine. Like, it feels
Yeah.
such a, it's such, it's a reaction that you could easily have.
So connected to, we can feel like the threat, there's this threat also, like this can happen with us as well.
Of course.
So any time, not in the same
Well,
way, but similar things can happen
it's also
and
true.
have happened as well. It's not like it
I think
hasn't
it's very,
happened.
I'm pretty sure I've been in situations where I've been a bystander also to a lot of things, which, I would have otherwise wanted to
Even I was a
oppose.
bystander today in an incident which was happening in my locality. So yeah, I
So, I mean,
totally
again,
agree
it's
with you.
that whole thing, right? It's very. And he mines tensions from all this, and there's no need. Again, I know recently we've had just a slate of absolute dog shit Hindi films, right? Which use
Oh
music
my God.
terribly. I'm just talking that in this film, the music is so minimal that the moving of the train, the every single thing which is near these people has an effect on your conscience,
On your
conscious, sorry,
psyche.
psyche, yes. I think the psyche connection should be a good way to move on to our second film, because I think
Yeah,
this
which
is
Dhruv has
his,
a lot to talk on, and Dhruv's
not
favorite of
necessarily,
Haneke, right?
oh, easily, easily, as in like these two are my favorite. Like first is Cache, and which we are going to talk about, and the second is Code Unknown. So, but Cache is definitely, I've seen it five times, four, five times. So like it's one of those films
He
I
has
keep on sort of.
mastered. He
No,
has
I'm not
mastered
ma
in
that film is very elusive. It can't be mastered like this.
that.
No, but I just think it's one of the films which I think there's an ilk of these films which are mysteries that like simmer. They keep on just, they have a, they burn essentially. There's a movie called Burning also, which is similar sort of thing where you just get this pent up stuff is just there from the beginning. You are never in a position of safety. You feel like anything will sort of, tip over at some point. And my God, what a way to start a movie, if there could be any,
I didn't
in
feel much
Kashyap.
discomfortable watching Kashi. I
Really?
didn't,
Okay. Okay, interesting. I was totally consistently
I didn't feel,
discomforted.
I was not discomfortable. I was like,
Interesting.
fine.
You didn't feel shock, at least at one mo at one moment you must have felt the shock. Everyone does, right?
I
The
felt the shock in the ending.
oh, ending. Okay, I thought shock in the, you might like, not the shock where Majid kills himself. That's a very violent sequence though.
I know, but I was okay, fine. So the ending, when so I was shocked to see, okay, these two. So I was
Okay,
considering them to be innocent, and
interesting.
I was befooled by
Okay.
him, played.
Okay, but anyways, Cache is very much about
You go on with
French.
this first, then
No,
I'll
that's not that. You can also say there's no problem in that.
no, first you
No, but
say.
Cache is Haneke's first digitally short film, which is a big, big thing. I feel like earlier, all of his films have been shot on film, and a lot of his ideology about that has is that film can't capture. The film essentially deceives us. Is a big thing, or film essentially conceals, doesn't reveal, is a big, big thing, right? So I think with digital cam, with the digital revolution during that time, the digital cameras had come out, and I think surveillance was a big thing. So I think there was a possibility he saw in the camera's power to liberate and to expose a lot of the pent-up feelings people have, especially in terms of the, again, society's. He belongs to a society which is slightly bourgeois and upper middle class. So I think very much he targets those communities and people also. But it's essentially
And
fashioned as.
cutting to that with the bourgeois thing, I just want to add, and then you go on. So the home's interior, when we see the home's interior, it's has these kind of beige, white, gray walls, which lots of books there, and which kind of compliments what Dhruv said about their bourgeois upper class style.
Yeah, I mean, he said during that they probably haven't read any of these books. They've just kept them. Haneke said something like that. But anyways, it's fashioned as a very typical who done it or who sent it as whatever you want to like, because it's essentially a couple, a bourgeois middle class, a bourgeois couple in Paris is terrorized by surveillance tapes essentially of their house. And those come along with these very cryptic, childlike drawings of someone's a boy bleeding from his mouth, a chicken bleeding from its neck. So, it's a lot of it's building on a sort of paranoid atmosphere of of privacy being invaded essentially of a couple who think they are in a safe space of their house, but sort of, the opening shot, I think, of the film is magnificent. It sets up a lot of things terrifically. It's funny games essentially, but transplanted to the first shot in a way. So basically, it's about it kind of gives you the fact that it kind of wrong foots you, is why I find the whole film very tense, is because you think in the beginning you're watching a real video, real life thing essentially, of you're watching a reality, but then you get after 2 3 minutes you get to
A
realize
documentary
that
kind of feeling we get
yes,
initially
or
with
that
the
he's just
documentary.
setting up this movie, but then you realize that we are actually watching George and Anne, the couple watching a videotape. So it's automatically sort of, throwing you off in a way, as in like, what is reality? What is sort of, you don't know the difference between reality and fiction in many ways. You don't know what is right, what is wrong. So that paranoid atmosphere of the whole film is there. And I think that part, and he uses this paranoia in a sense to interrogate guilt. And I think this is the one film of his in which there is a catharsis of sorts, in the sense that there is a catharsis of sorts, in the sense that there is someone's guilt which is exposed essentially, and that's a guilt that he thinks is now something that he'll have to live with. I think that's how it's a positive sort of, conclusion to it. But the whole film, I think, and the reason why I do keep coming back to it is just because, well, when it released in 2005, it became very popular when it released at Cannes. It had won the Best Director for Haneke, and it caused like a huge amount of discussion based on the final shot of the film. Because everyone was like, did you watch it? Did you catch them? Did you see it? What does it mean? What does that mean? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But the more, like the first time, of course, when I watched it, I was like, oh, wow, I did not expect that. And in the last scene, he's also doing his toying thing where you can miss actually, where if these
I
people are there,
missed.
because I said, you missed, okay. So that's because he's playing at the idea that we look at the center of the frame most. So he places them to the right or left, wherever they were. So yeah, I think that question of who actually sent the tapes is becomes less and less important, I think, when the more I watch it, because it's so directly connected with exposing Paris or like French people's sort of, guilt or suppressed guilt of the French Algerian War, which is something which is referenced actually fairly lightly in the film sometimes. Like it's like it's the more you see it, of course you recognize that it's being referenced a lot, but it's referenced very explicitly only
So it
once.
is referenced very kind of symbolically, very symbolic.
No, but there's one time when it's said, actually everything is said verbally, but it's very brief and it's very
Yeah,
quick.
it's during the conversation which George's have with his mother,
No,
right?
that's not the one. I'll tell you, I've written down the quote essentially. He tells Anne this for the first time essentially. So George is essentially a representation of a lot of French society, which tried to suppress what happened in the Paris Massacre of 1961 against Arabs during the French Algerian War. So he says, George tells Anne when he's revealing to her finally that, I know who might be sending the tapes because this happened in my past, and this might be the reason they might be sending it. And Anne is consistently exasperated by him throughout the film because he tries to hide a lot of the stuff and then tries to lie. But he says, quote, and this is sort of very much informs the backstory of the film in many ways, quote, in October 61, the FLN called all Algerians to a demonstration in Paris, October 17, 1961. Enough said. Papon is the one of the main officers, I think, who was responsible for the police massacre. This he doesn't say, I'm saying. They drowned about 200 Arabs in the Seine, including Majid's parents, most likely. They never came back. Dad went to Paris to look for them. They said he should be glad to be rid. They said be glad to be rid of a couple of jigaboos. That's sort of very much the context summed up very much by our protagonist as to what is being repressed by France and what is being repressed by him is connected to it because he is someone who, just for his comfort's sake, at the age of six, sort of, told lies about Majid, who's the son of these people, Arabs who were drowned, and they were sort of farmhands to his parents. And I think when he got drowned, so he told them lies about his, I think he was coughing blood and just, a lot of lies he told about him.
First he said like he was coughing up blood and his so that his parents assumed that he has tuberculosis, but that didn't work. And then yeah, then though he told that lie of then he told Majid to kill the that
Chicken.
chicken, that rooster, claiming that his father had asked him. And then he told his parents that he Majid did this as a threat, and then Majid is sent to orphanage. Yeah.
And the orphanage, again, very, very light reference. Basically, it said that it's implied that the orphanage really is not a good place,
Yeah.
at least for them at that point in time. So,
So, yeah.
very much this is a film about reckoning with guilt,
Yeah.
reckoning with colonial guilt in one sense, and using surveillance as a way to reckon with that. I think is a very
Yeah,
ingenious way
yeah.
to,
Yeah.
talk about something like that. And so yeah, I think that's sort of very much the essence of the film. But you watched it for the first time. What did you think? What did you make of it? And
Quite similar, quite similar. Just to add a bit, like mostly same. Whatever you said, I agree with all of it. So I would like to talk about the shorts. The shorts are designed in such a way that we continually ask questions about what we see. So camera angle is always from George's point of view, and even the camera which captures George's confronting Majid seems to be hidden in his apartment. So that goes with the title. Even the closing shot, which is typical Haneke stationary image, his signature style, static image, and where we see Majid's unnamed son and Anne's and George's son, Piero. Piero is the, yes. And they are talking together, and it feels that Haneke has hidden them in the shot, as Dhruv said. So, yeah, and why that scene is very significant, because before that scene only, we see that young Majid is being taken to orphanage where he's very unwilling to go, and Georges is recalling this, where a young Georges is hidden himself in a barn, and he's noticing this whole sequence where in his pastoral farmhouse, this Majid,
Yes, estate, yeah, I think, yeah.
after he has wrongly accused or wrongly lied about Majid is being carried away to the orphanage, quite forcefully we see, and it's not a very pleasant memory, or it's not a very pleasant thing. And then the next scene, the immediate next scene we see is of that
There's a final
school,
short, ending credits also come there.
the final shot and everything. So as Dhruv said, like it's through surveillance, it's a surveillance of the memory which is going on. So memories basically steeped in guilt, and the characters are made to reconcile it. So George can be seen as so Kaushik can be seen as a critique of violent colonial past, and also the denial of post-colonial present. And George's is basically France, or France's unwillingness to openly acknowledge its role in the 1961 Paris massacre. George continuously tries to suppress the memory of the Majid, and it's a kind of symbolic guilt, and represents how the state tried to bury the atrocity in their distant memory.
It fits with a lot of Haneke. I think we talked about it even in Code Unknown, that because they belong to a culture and society in which everything needs to be buried, hidden, that's meaning
So
the
a
multiple things. So.
country, a country kind of denying its history, which also parallels to Americans even ignoring
Of
their
course.
treatment towards native tribes or African slaves, the British Empire's entire colonial
Colonialism in
process
general, I think, is a big,
across the rule. And also, there is one particular scene where kind of George has this collision with a black biker. And
Yes.
there we see that scene is kind of a red herring in this,
Yes.
I can say,
It's
of
code
this
unknown,
pattern.
also very unlinked, no? Like almost like a scene off out of that only, yeah. Like a
But along
very
with
charged
that,
scene also, yeah.
here though, there is this element of racism. Of course, that is evident because that a biker is black. But
Yes.
along with that, I feel it also. So George kind of is in a heightened state. He kind of defends himself. So this scene kind of foreshadows George's unwillingness to accept his guilt. So
Yeah.
he's always ready to blame others,
Yeah, it's
which is
defensive, no?
also
He's very defensive throughout the
he's
whole
very
movie,
defensive. He's
yeah.
ready to blame others, and which goes with France as well as a
Yeah.
state.
Yeah. No,
So
I think I mean, but like we've talked about, of course, the bigger themes and sort of, you know, I mean, I think Haneke is doing mainly that only, but I still think at least it works as a mystery also. I mean, if there is a clear answer, I think, for who's sending.
It's a mystery, of course, because we don't know that if it's Majid, unnamed son had talked to Piero and they have
Well,
planned it.
this is why I think it's also like one of the more positive films, where it's almost like, you know, this new generation is talking to each other. I mean, of course, they're talking to essentially, you know, blackmail or his parents or whatever, like to get them to acknowledge something. Also, and we've not talked much about, she's not perfect at all in the film also. You know, she has a relationship essentially out of marriage. And there's this very interesting scene. I've seen it two, three
She
times
might
now.
be representative of those uninformed people about the country, so don't
Yeah.
know much, and they're always distressed. They're always in this quest to know much, but she's not allowed to know much because her husband always hides away
Yeah.
things from her. So
Yeah.
she seeks refuge in a colleague most of the time,
Really?
who's also her
Yeah.
boss. And
Yeah.
her
Yeah.
son has a
No,
problem with that.
son, I think, knows that they are having an affair. That's why she tries to, like, you know, tell him that, you know, don't
I
think.
also feel he kind of plays it smart and blaming it on the mother so that the mother can't find out actually what he's up to, and so that she doesn't poke him much
Might be,
about.
might be.
So he's
No,
playing
but
because he's a damn.
Anne is also like, again, Anne is not a saint here. You know, like I don't think there's
No.
any, like Majid is the saint, I suppose, of all. Like he's very saint, not saintly, but he's a very tragic character, and I think the actor.
Majid can be seen, but then again, he only calls him in the apartment, so he probably knows,
I
when
don't know
the.
when, like, I don't know how to accommodate his role within all this. Like, I feel he doesn't know at the beginning genuinely, but then later it almost like, you know, the son lets him in. But why would he tell his
But,
son that he's committing suicide? And why would he agree to it? Which is the other thing, right? But the actor I just want to flag up, Maurice Benicio is
The
the
same
who's a,
guy we see in the metro.
in Code Unknown, yeah, and
Who
he's in Time of the
protests.
Wolf also, so yeah. He's
Okay.
got a recurring cast that way. But no, I think he's terrific in the small role he has here also. Like I think there's this one
That
scene
one
where he
scene.
has to break down, right? No, I mean that scene I think is like when I first watched it, I was just like, because again, Haneke doesn't show violence a lot of times, and this one instance is so violent because it's so sudden that it's almost like you can't react. Like you do become frozen a little bit.
It just happened in a blink of an eye. Like, he enters the apartment and he says,
He
I want you
says,
to be here. I want you to be here. And then he slashes his throat and there's blood all
yeah. It
around.
sprays
And
out like again. It's if you see the poster, it's basically like a sprayed out blood on the poster, like, which is sort of reminiscent of how the thing goes there. But no, I think it's a fascinating, again, a fascinating text in terms of, you know, analysis. I think definitely, but even just, I like the sort of quietly paranoid, really. You know, tension that bubbles, at least for me it did and still does, where it's like, you know, it feels like something is off and something keeps on, you know, it'll unravel in a way which is very ugly, and it kind of does. But no, I do think it's more quote unquote optimistic than his films, other films.
Qu'est-ce qu'on doit faire maintenant?
Et comment ça?
Et tu veux prévenir la police?
Oui, Non, je sais pas. Redonne-moi le dessin.
Il vaut peut-être mieux aller à la police.
On dirait plutôt un dessin d'enfant.
Aucune idée, je peux pas dire.
I think we can move on. You know,
yeah,
we can
move
on into the
we
very
can.
pessimistic
I,
film.
Yeah, which Dhruv didn't connect with at all, but I love
no,
it.
No. Not connect with. I've watched it thrice now. Okay, so like first time I didn't like it. Second time I also didn't really like it. Third time I kind of get it, but I still think it's his weaker work. But I also think it's his weaker work because it's following on the trails of something. Like, I have an issue with Zone of Interest also in this way. There's a certain obviousness to this film, which I think isn't there in his best work. And I think White Ribbon sometimes falters because of that. But I mean, it's a gorgeous looking film for whoever is sort of, you know, the black and white cinematography. It was actually not shot in black and white. It was shot in color and then digitally transferred to black and white. But to me, it's reminiscent of something like a Bellatar film sometimes. And I'm just like, I'm a little put off by Bellatar because I'm just like, if you're going to make the film about the end of the world, why should I watch it? Like, you know, it's like end of the world isn't like the film begins at a point of where the world has ended, right? So I'm like, iske baad kya dekhu main? I'm like, khatam to ho gayi, right? So what is left to watch? But no, I mean, there's interesting stuff in White Ribbon. I think I forgot actually. I really like one relationship which I thought was very lovely. Actually, I was like, I forgot how much of a good contrast it is to like everything horrible happening in the film, which is
the teacher and
Eva's relationship. I was like, this is quite a lovely relationship they share. Anyways, White Ribbon is about. Shilika, you want to take the honors or do you want me to say?
All right, fine.
Okay.
So, White Ribbon. So, White Ribbon is basically Haneke's analysis of how fascism is born. So, he says in his interview, like the film, so this is Haneke telling, exactly, I'm quoting him. So, the film examines the issue of the conditions that lead to terrorism. To do it employs Germany's past, which I would like to emphasize is only an example. So, he uses, so it is not a film about fascism.
Yeah.
It's basically shows how the fascism
the
is,
roots of evil is
the
what
roots
I
of evil is done. Yeah. So it's important that the film isn't interpreted as being solely about German fascism, but that it's more.
I mean,
generally,
it's not. It's set in a fictional village.
Yeah. It deals
called
with
I
all
Cord,
time.
which is like already you get a World War II combination of things essentially. Yeah. So. No, say sorry. Go ahead.
You want to say something?
No. You take over White Ribbon. I will listen because I want to listen to some fandom of towards it because I'm. I'm not negative towards it.
It's not fandom. It's my analysis. I'm films. My two favorite films are Piano Teacher and Funny Games.
Sure, got it. Bolo, White Ribbon.
Yeah, so it deals with it deals with the roots of all kinds of terrorism, whether politically right, politically left, or religious.
Mm-hmm.
So, White Ribbon, the subtitle is German Children's Tale.
Yeah.
And before I begin with this, so I want to bring in this idea of a childhood, and which Haneke kind of believes, or I guess is very much synonymous to a very famous text by William Golding, that is Lord of the Flies in 1954, that is also Golding's debut novel, and where he talks about this concept of innate evil that is that in human beings can never be negated. And in that film, we see a group of after playing in that book, not film, sorry. So
no,
in
no,
that book,
no problem.
after the aeroplane crashes, so children land on an island, and then we see how their innocence is lost and they fight for each other.
There is cause effect in that though, right? Clear cause and effect.
Yeah, so they are not innocent. So Haneke believes in the same, and he said that in one of his interviews is children are neither pure innocents nor pure monsters. They are somewhere in between, like the rest of us. So, and that is very much evident even in all the films children's are there. He deals with
yeah, of course.
And how they are prone to violence. So in Funny Games, in even in some aspects of Kashi is there only,
There. I mean,
and
even
vice
Code
versa.
Unknown, even that
Even Code,
kid, the brother. Yeah.
and it's also there in White Ribbon.
I mean,
And
Glaciation trilogy is full of this, huh? By the way, like Benny's video is essentially about a
I
person who's
haven't
obsessed
watched
with the
that. I
TV.
haven't
I
yet
mean,
to
it's
watch
basically
that.
a precursor to Funny Games, a weaker Funny Games, I would say.
Acha.
But it's good.
Is the, acha, I have to watch it. So the underlying idea of White Ribbon was to make a film about children who turn the ideals that have been preached to them into absolute principles and then punish the individuals who did the preaching and who themselves don't live in accordance with these ideals.
Sure. Punish the
So,
individuals who don't. So, as in, like, they have been preached something by the village elders, which they internalize and then they want to teach to other people that way? Or do you think they are rebelling against these things that they've been taught?
They are rebelling against, in a way, I think, the things they are being taught, but then they're also ingraining
Yes,
the amount of
of
repression.
course,
So both
of
the
course.
things are going on.
Sure.
And Haneke, I guess he said he wrote this, thought about this screenplay for 20 years, and then finally he made
He was
this
about to
film.
make it to a television show, right? I think, yeah.
And these children, we see, they essentially would grow up to be the first generation of Germans to become Nazis. Or
Yeah.
and the character, the main characters in the film are the teacher, who is basically the
Yes.
narrator, the
Yeah,
omniscient
he's this
narrator.
is also our zone of interest connection, Christian Friedel, the guy who plays whoever he plays in Zone of Interest, I forgot his name. Rudolf Hauss. And he plays a very nice man in this film. So contrast,
Exactly. I was actually recalling, like, where have I seen this guy? Where have I seen this guy? And then I said, oh my God, yes, in Zone of Interest, yes. So this omniscient narrator is basically, here is an old man who is the
It's
teacher.
him. It's him only, right? Yeah.
It's
Or
him only, and but the voice is that of
voice is
an old
different.
man.
Yes.
Yes. And we know from that, from his age, we can see that he reflects upon the events and he's not sure. So we know the events from his point of view. So
This
there
is
is
very
this
Hanukkah,
unsurety. Yeah, this
huh?
is
And
very
surety
Hanukkah.
is very Hanukkah. Like, you can't, like, again, he won't ever give tell you that I'm giving you a complete picture of anything. Again, wo fra like your fragmentation is, and sort of, ambiguity
He's
is already
unsure.
inserted.
Ambiguity is already inserted in the voiceover
Voiceover
exposition already.
that begins the movie. Yeah.
So, and then from the speaker's age, we feel that he could have experienced fascism because the voice is that of an old person. So cutting back to what I was saying, so the main characters are the na teacher, who is the narrator, and then there is the baron, the
Yes.
doctor, the steward, and the pastor or the Protestant minister.
The
And
four
these
evil
all
fathers.
the four evil fathers or the patriarchs, the wielders of patriarchy, authoritarians, whoever. These people are the main people who are running this fictional village. And a vicious activity takes place where somebody kind of ties a
First is the
wire
tear. I was about to say, first is
in
the
front of
wire.
the doctor's house, and his horse trips, and the
Very,
doctor.
very, very iffy CGI on the horse tripping, but okay, yes. I've seen the movie thrice, sorry, so I'm like noticing all this stuff now. That's
You
also because
would.
I'm not the biggest fan of the film, so I'm, I will start to notice. By biggest fan, I mean I still like it. As I said at the beginning of the episode, I have grown to appreciate a Haneke film even when I don't love it. So, it's that level of not like.
The respect for we have for him.
Yes.
So that is that vicious activity, and that kind of incident kind of
So this is the doctor
brings us
falling
into
down
a
essentially, right?
doctor falling down, and then
Yeah.
we get into a chain of vicious activities
So
in the
after that, I
village.
think the after that, I
And
think the one of the farmer's wife dies, then the events stop for a while, then
Very interesting, that scene you re made me remember. So then when the farmer's wife dies, and his eldest son, who goes to inspect, and there is this damned wood from which she has fallen, so that is kind of symbolic that something is rotten,
हाँ
which
यस
is
यस वो
stained.
बोलते भी हैं आई थिंक सब आई मीन विच इज माय होल ऑब्वियस थोड़ा लाइक आई थिंक द होल फिल्म इज अ लिटल लीनिंग ऑन द ऑब्वियस फॉर मी बट ओके फाइन एनीवेज गो अहेड
So the malevolent activities which takes place in the village, they become a microcosm of what will later happen in the country. And there are themes of feudalism, Lutheranism, male chauvinism, and then the rhythm of seasons, that structure the life of the impoverished citizenry. And we see certain scenes of extreme disturbing scenes where children are beaten, where children are
That's consistent,
sexually,
no? I mean, beaten is consistent, not sexually
beaten,
assaulted.
sexually assaulted is one
Well, not
scene where,
assaulted. They are like it's incest in one way,
incest, yeah, you're right.
but I don't think they show it. Like in the film, it's implied more so than shown, if I'm not
They
wrong.
don't show it, but then there is one scene where so basically the incest is committed by the doctor
Doctor, which is
who
the
kind
biggest
of,
character I have an issue with, actually. But anyways, we'll get to him. No, but I was talking about no, we'll just go. So I think I'll wait a second. What notes did I have? I have a lot of notes.
And
Sorry.
yeah, go on,
Go
go
ahead,
on.
go ahead. No, what were you saying first?
No,
You
what were you saying with the doctor? So, right, you say what your point is, and then I'll
Huh, so
tell
I think
you.
the doctor is the sort of, with I think the there's four patriarchs, as you said. Firstly, I don't know who is the steward.
The steward is the person who takes care of baron's lands and everything.
No, but like, who is he in the film?
He's that
Like,
character.
well, like, I don't recognize him only. Like, is he shown? Is he
No,
the father of the three children at the house? The one who has the nightmare?
he is the father of the child who gets sick, and then the doctor goes, and the eldest son is not happy that a boy is born, so he keeps open the window, and
Ha. So uski
he's
her,
also the
her.
father, he's also that man. So there is this festival going on now, and then Eva
Yes.
sits there and he says, "Why, the
Ah,
why?"
okay. He's the one who comes and sits there.
That is the
Sure, sure, sure,
steward.
sure. Okay. Got it. So he's the father also of the girl who has a dream that one of the kids is gonna get hurt or something like that, right? Okay, got it. So he's the steward. So with him, with the I think the pastor is the easy I think the pastor is the most quote unquote developed villain, if that makes sense.
And which kind of shows Haneke's critique of Protestantism, because he
Of
belongs to a
course,
Protestant family,
no, but
and
the doctor was the one where I was like, is he just like he just has that evil turn so quickly. I was like, I was basically internally saying, can you just punch him like to the midwife? I was like,
Yeah, midwife, my
just
God.
take something and hit him on the head.
That
No, like whatever.
entire conversation, I'm like, my blood is boiling. But that is what Haneke is wanting, I guess. So
Nay,
he
but
wants.
I feel with him, I felt like there's very little given. Like he's just evil incarnate in a way where I was like, I don't know if I can buy him at all. Like there's no redeeming, nothing only. In the pastor's case, you have that whole episode with his youngest son, which I think is quite nice.
No, I love the scene where the daughter took revenge on the father by killing the bird.
Bird.
That
You
bird
like
has been
bird
killed.
violence?
No, but she got humiliated and then she crucified
I
that
mean,
bird with
she's
the
the
scissors.
biggest villain
Devil,
also
yeah,
here.
she and her brother whose
Well, the
hands are
brother
tied.
converts though, I think, because the brother in the beginning is very like he confesses only, no, almost, because he's crying. No, but anyways, go ahead. Say. My issue with that character is essentially, so I wrote psychological blanking. Essentially, that's a way in which he operates sometimes anyways, because he's showing us fragments and it's taking a distanced point of view of the teacher, so you don't expect much out of character psychology of these people. But I have written that I wonder if it would have benefited slightly more from getting into the mindset of the priest or pastor or the doctor or the baron. The doctor's lecherousness is in particular off-putting simply because it
Specifically,
seems
the doctor. The doctor's mind could have been, I agree. But the
simply because
priest
it
is.
seems to stem from the belief that he's just going to be like that. Like his bouts of cruelty feel the most programmatic slash calculated to me. Almost like Haneke needs that authoritarian men are all dickbags. Which is fine, they are probably. But like, with
No,
that
but
character,
then.
it was I was a bit like, this is a bit
It
too
felt forced.
unconvincing. Huh, of course, doesn't like it felt like you have to make the point, so let's make the character like this. Which is what my
Makes sense. But with the pastor, I guess enough is given about his
पास्टर के
mentality.
साथ है. यस पास्टर के साथ इट्स अ प्रॉपर
He
लाइक
even with
दैट
the
इज विद
Baron also, Baron
द
and Baron is
बैरन
also.
इज फेयरली पैसिव ऑल्सो नो लाइक ही ओनली टेक्स एक्शन एट द एंड इन एनी केस.
Yeah.
ही इज अ टिपिकल योर वॉट एवर रूलर हु इज एन एसहोल व्हिच इज फाइन यू
Yeah.
गेट दैट. बट इवन अगेन विद हिज सीन विद हिज वाइफ आई वाज लाइक यू डोंट नीड द वाइफ टू से द होल मैलिस दिस दिस एंड दिस. आई वाज लाइक Why are we getting so didactic here? Like in the sense of, you know, I thought this was supposed like there is mystery here. You know, there
Yeah.
is because you, in a sense, you have to kind of piece together what all they are picking up and turning it into. Why are they doing this essentially? You know who is
Yeah.
doing this. I don't
Yeah.
think there's that much of a mystery as to who is committing these things.
So again, those children, I mean, like
Of course.
the group
Yeah,
of
there's
children
no.
were
But I
there.
feel, you know, earlier I used to be
But we
bothered.
feel, but there is also this kind of good thing which I feel the children had done, especially with the doctor. Because after we know the what doctor is a kind of vicious person, so what is being done to him like it makes sense. So
Ah, I
here,
think
in a way,
it's from her side, no? Like from
yeah.
the girl's side at her home, Anna or Annie, I don't know what her name is.
Yeah. I don't
Like
remember
it.
the sister's name, but there is this also amazing conversation on death, which goes.
Oh
I love that
yes.
Between
It's
doctors, the
very Ingmar
elder.
Bergman.
Yeah,
But yes.
elder daughter and his son, and they talk about death and how death is inevitable and it will come to everyone, and we cannot escape death. And that little,
Hanukkah exercising all the Nietzsche knowledge.
and that child's innocence is gone. And that single scene at night when he kind of searches, because his since he lost his father, lost his mother at a very young age, so he considers his sister to be a motherly figure, and one night he kind of goes and sees her father and her sister, and he's telling that she's lying, that she's piercing my ears, and then the father says that beauty suffers, and some kind of this quotation, I
Some
guess,
nonsense,
some nonsense. So that is the entire loss of innocence for
Yes.
for
But
the
I think
son,
the
lost
loss of
son.
innocence is there for almost everyone in the film, right? Like it is
No,
a story of
they were
innocence
not
lost.
innocent only. There was no innocence. That's why I mentioned the other children. They
No, what about the
right.
child? I mean, he doesn't lose his innocence, no? The child who basically offers his own
Yeah, I was about to say he's the
bird.
only guy. He's the only guy in the film
And even
who
no,
remains intact.
not the one who says she's having a dream that this person is going to,
We
they're
don't
gonna
know if
hurt.
she's really role playing or if she's pretending. She might
I
be
mean, I
informed
thought
by
she,
the
no, I thought she was just basically being like, you know, trying to signal to them that these people will harm.
I thought she knows already, and this is just some game which is
Oh,
going
she's
on.
doing a funny game.
Yeah, maybe
There's a
because
lot of
funny
funny
game,
games then in this.
because in Haneke's movies there's always a game going on. A game is being played, which very Joycean, very Joycean, very Joycean. Even in all of James Joyce's texts, especially Dubliners, so his collection of short stories, there is this game which is being played between the characters, and that is very much echoing in
I mean,
all of.
I mean, I'm so the weird thing is I'm actually most interested in this film is the opposite side there. I'm just like, get me to the love story quickly because I do really like the both of them getting to know each
Haneke
other.
won't be giving that,
Of
so
course. No, but
Haneke's.
whenever it does come, I was like, this is actually very sensitive. I was like, I did not
Yeah.
expect it to be this, you know, sweet. In a sweet, in a very like, you know, I mean, Haneke sweet means like it's still measured. It's not like, you
Yeah.
know, he's not gonna mix sugar. It's like C whatever CP whatever what was the sugar-free thing you mix into the thingy. It's like that version of sweet,
Not
not.
expecting this kind of romantic story, especially
But it's
after
very
seeing Amor.
nice. But Amor, I think, is romantic in a very Haneke way. It is expression of love only, not to take care and to let go whenever you whenever there's someone else is suffering.
I to love romantic, the piano teacher, the little bit of romance sequences. Very problematic.
For this, you have to watch the piano teacher to then object to Srilekha. So please, please,
No,
please.
nobody will have this distorted idea of romance because I am into theories and psychoanalysis. They're obsessed about Freud, so that's why I kind
That
of.
is now. Now Srilekha is making excuses, but do see piano teacher to see what she's meaning, because there is, to me at least, not an ounce of romance in that. I mean, there is in terms of some short selections and the way the film destabilizes her, falling in love almost, but romance in between those two, no.
All right. And I also love the way you all are changing the topic.
Sorry,
My
go ahead. I didn't change the topic.
problematic self will be exposed. I don't want
It's okay. I
that.
mean, we're talking about Hanukkah films. We've done a whole podcast on Hanukkah. So,
So I
yeah.
also like the way he kind of employs the monochrome thing, which Dhruv mentioned, and it makes the film more objective. Like it creates some kind of distance. That whole
That's
and
what
then
he wanted to do, I think,
that's
right? I
what he
mean,
wanted. That's what he wanted. So and there is also this theme of rebellion, which is going on since we're
Yes.
discussing, we're giving spoilers, which is echoed in the life of the tragic peasant and whose wife falls through the floor of the baron's rickety barn and is killed. And then we see the peasant's old son blames the baron, and he gets his revenge by destroying the landowner's cabbage
Cabbage.
patch.
I mean, well, that's quite
So,
a pointless endeavor considering it makes his family suffer.
he
But
makes his
yeah.
family suffer, and I don't feel that kind, that entire sub, whatever is going on, that sub narrative or whatever, that makes any, that doesn't, didn't make any sense to me. That was not needed only for me.
No, but I think it's that whole idea, right? That
Of
even people,
rebellion,
no,
of
whoever wants to
rebelling.
rebel is shut out, no, or shut off in many ways. Because at the end of the day, even the teacher wants to basically tell what he thinks is the truth, and then the pastor is basically like shut up in an extended way.
And he even says that whatever, if we find out what is what has happened in the village and who did this, then we can also kind of deduce what is happening in our country. What has happened to
No,
our
I mean, it's
country?
very much links to the whole secrecy and, the whole idea of forgetting incidents is the quote I had kept. Like, just, if something bad happens, you forget it. Something bad happens, you forget it. You keep on forgetting stuff, and then until the massacre. So again, zone of interest, or yeah, this is like a proper double bill if you want to have and see and just see how horrible people are again, which again, more evidence,
So,
I don't think you need.
the white ribbon is kind of emblematic of the iniquity of the
Innocence.
minister and the other abusive fathers of this imagined German village. And these fathers, they forge the conscience or consigns of a generation that would embrace Hitler,
But I mean,
leading to a final solution.
I'm trying to think if that's the one thing I did like actually about the film when I rewatched it now today, that you can't like there, as you said, I think the children's rebel it's child the children are adopting and rebelling at the same time, right? So it's like a bit you have to sort of see what exactly they're taking up and what values they're sort of spitting out. And then of course the main thing that does stand out is the idea of turning a blind eye, which again goes back to Kashyyyk, again goes back to Code Unknown. This, this whole society of ignorance and society of remaining quiet when everything in front of you is also burning down. Actually, is interesting considering this has a mirror, as in Tarkovsky ki mirror ka shot almost. The barn burns down, whatever. But I know that I was reading a little bit that Christian Berger was inspired by Ingmar Bergman and Sven Nyquist's black and white cinematography for a lot of their films. There is this moment where they're in the church and the pastor is essentially making all of them drink the whatever they drink to remove
That
their
their sins,
sins.
and he
That's
looks at
straight
his
from
daughter.
But then he allows her, no? So he also gives her the
But he
Amrit,
knows,
Amrit बोलते हैं क्या, अमृति बोलते हैं.
but he knows that his
यस
kind of knows that kind
Of
of
course.
his daughter is guilty. And this again reminded me of this one Federico Fellini's Amar Cord, where
Don't
there is
spoil it. I've
this.
not seen
Okay, fine.
it.
There is this one scene where kind of children repeatedly go to the father and they confess their sins. And then they again commit the same sins and they go to the father because they know that their sins will be forgiven. So this is one of the flaws
Interesting.
of yes, this happens repeatedly. So there is this prostitute who is there and they kind of the boys kind of take fun, they touch her and they do all kinds of ill activities which they shouldn't be doing at their age. And then they go to the father and to absolve them of their sins. And this repeatedly they goes one by one. So there's this scene, kind of scene in the church where all of the boys are going one by one, they're telling their sins, and the father is absolving them of their sins. And they're getting the license to do it again.
Quite
So,
sickening.
yeah.
But no, but I was saying that that whole sequence reminded me of Winterlight by Ingmar Bergman, another film. You should, yeah, I mean, see, we'll end on this note. I think we've
Yeah.
covered, what did we promise, 2 hours? I think we have covered this in time, if I'm not wrong. I think we
Yes.
have, or maybe somewhat in time. But
Yeah.
no, I was saying that basically this has, like, I think when you talk about a prominent European filmmaker who's modern day filmmaker, or even older, as in like who've made films in the 60s, 70s, 80s, you do eventually end up talking a little bit about a lot of other European filmmakers they were inspired
Yeah.
from also, right? So I
Yeah.
think like Haneke, you can very much dovetail from him to Ingmar Bergman, or Bresson, or of course
Impression.
Tarkovsky a little bit, but I don't think there's much Tarkovsky in Haneke. But these two especially, I think, are big, you could easily go into.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, I mean, I know that they're not easy again to watch because they're all fairly
Yeah.
bleak and depressing and, austere also in their style. They don't like
Austria.
welcome you with open arms, essentially. They're just like standing there. They're not basically Shahrukh Khan in Mohabbat. I had to put that, sorry, just to diffuse all the Haneke tension that we've built up throughout the episode. We had to end on something.
We were pretty, I guess we covered most of whatever is there.
I hope we, at one point I was thinking, are we speaking like David Fincher's Social Network protagonist, where I'm like, are we speaking at double the speed just to get through all of it? I hope it doesn't sound like that. I
Yeah.
hope we've but I think we've covered definitely a lot, because all my
Yeah.
notes, whichever I have here, have been covered, I
Yeah.
think. And we did love doing this, I think. I mean, I
Yeah.
love doing the research, I love doing the podcast for this. This is my type
Yeah.
of stuff, like totally my zone.
Yeah. Totally
So
my zone too.
yeah, and I know a lot of people don't share this zone, but I do really
Yeah.
like discussing these types of filmmakers because I think they are fascinating.
Yeah, they're very fascinating, and that these are what made Haneke also an auteur.
Yes,
Since we
yes.
call him an auteur, because he has this
Oh, he is.
influence.
I mean, if he's not an auteur, then a lot of people
Who
aren't. He's
is?
a yeah, he's a proper auteur.
If he is an auteur, then who is? But then, yeah, like his distinctive style and the way he deals or portrays with sensitive issues, so he doesn't kind of shuns away from showing the kind of brutal side or from showing the naked truth. He shows them the way they are. Like the reality is
Also, you
hard.
get to, and also you get to experience some great actor performances, actually, because
Yeah,
I mean,
great actor.
Binoche and Huppert are the sort of big names because they've appeared in a lot of, well, lot, but Huppert especially has appeared in like three, four of his films, and she's good in, it's Isabelle Huppert, she's good in, again, most things. You get Jean-Louis Trintignant, I think that's how you pronounce his name, or I hope I've not butchered it. But it's Amour, he's also in Happy End. Happy End, which I think is basically Haneke's last film, as he's made up till now, at least. I don't think he's planned to make another film. But that's the film in which he basically tips over into slight comedy almost. Because it's like,
I'm yet to watch it.
I mean, it's comedy because like it is a sort of remix of all of his work before, but then it's all almost like there is nothing in terms of critiquing left to do. It's almost like all you got to do now is just like, you know, laugh at
Enjoy.
how, no, not enjoy, laugh at how destructed and destroyed we are as a
Yeah.
species. So I'm like, yeah, fine, good. Like, let's end on that note type of thingy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah,
But do
Binoche
watch
there.
Haneke's films, guys. Do watch. He's an amazing, amazing director, and we are highly recommending him.
I mean, we
So
did for 2 hours.
yeah,
Hopefully, they
I'm
did.
still emphasizing on the fact. So it's an entirely different, it might be distressing, it might be disturbing, but then
And if you have, no, but if you have,
but then we have proper reasons to show. Like, he deals with themes and
Ha, it's
issues
not
which
provocation for
are,
the sake of provocation, yeah, which we have enough in India of late. So he's not that. But whoever has seen his work can please get in touch with us and let us know about what they thought of the episode. What are your favorite Haneke films? You can discuss it with us on Instagram or on the, I will put out a questionnaire essentially of your favorite Haneke film, and you can please tell us what you think. And I would actually be very curious to know people who don't like his work also, and what do they not like about it, and why do they
What are
not
your
like about it?
arguments?
Is there none of the film? Are you just opposed to the style? Are you just opposed to his ideology as a filmmaker? Again, these are things which we would love to know. I know there are people who don't
Or is it
espouse,
just the
who stick to that.
discomfort? Or is
No,
it
no, no,
just the
no, no, no.
discomfort
It's
which is.
the other. I think it's not just the discomfort. There will
No,
be
many, many of
there will
my people
there
have
will be a
said, like,
sex there will be a section of people who will just not like him because it's discomforting. But I think
no.
others have expressed, whichever I've whatever known of, is that his films are too sterile. His films are too, you know, pre. They're too obsessively compact. Like, they're too rigidly made almost. Like, it's like there's no space for us to breathe within them, which I'm like, fine, I get it. But I mean, again, I
So
always
if you
think that
love
when
Bertolt Brecht's works, you definitely love Haneke. If you love Brechtian plays, all literature students, if they will be listening, any, I will be
you are
sending, like,
sharing to them only, yeah.
yeah, I will
Mere
share.
literature
So
friends nahi hai, because main literature nahi padhta.
yeah, but Brecht, though, I guess he's a well-known
I've read
theory.
about Brecht. Yes. I've not read Brecht, but I've read about Brecht, which is a
Yeah.
different. Yes, yeah.
So if you all are into Brecht's works or Brecht works, whatever the spelling, I'm not sure. I pronounce
It's
him as
okay.
Brecht.
Brecht, Brecht, whatever, that doesn't
Yeah.
matter. It's okay.
So
Samaj aa gaya na, bas wo bahut
yeah.
Yeah.
So please, Haneke is an ardent follower of Brecht and Adorno. Even Adorno.
He mentions it in
Adorno.
Piano Teacher, I think,
Yeah,
right?
Adorno. Yeah, in one quote, Adorno as a musician, and also Adorno's theory of culture industry, which I'm not going into details because it has a lot to say.
Okay.
So yeah.
Yeah, so I think hopefully you guys did. For people who haven't heard of Haneke, hopefully you got to know about him. Hopefully whoever has heard of him and has seen all of his films is a fan, thought that we did justice to talking about his work. Yeah, I mean, please recommend us other filmmakers who we might be
Yeah.
able to discuss. I'm happy to spend time on this sort of filmmaker, you know, deep dive. I'm always happy. Of course, please don't give us filmmakers who've made 40 films. It's gonna be a bit hard. Like Ozu, I'm just like, my God, how, where do you start? Anyways, but yeah, but
Yeah, please start.
do give us suggestions of other filmmakers, film movements. We are, after this episode, the second episode this week, actually, that's gonna be released, is for Masaki Kobayashi, another Japanese filmmaker, and three Samurai films, which you know who will be joining me in that.
Amartya.
Yeah, I mean, he's the I mean I'm joining him, not he's joining me,
The
actually.
quintessential person who is not there today.
Yeah, but that's because he doesn't like European cinema.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it.
And he's biased enough to not venture into it. But okay, Amartya, it's fine. But yes, thank you so much. And
Yeah. Thank you.
khatam.
Thank you,
Yes.
Dhruv.
No, मुझे क्यों, थैंक यू.